Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. From Dallas, Texas, Ryan Pope. Michael Rooster Phelan from Richmond, Virginia. Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa. Toby House Milrod from Philadelphia. Chris Bison Nace from D.C.
SMQBs, episode 124. Rooster, give me a name or number in sports that you're thinking about today.
George Brett. 40 years ago today, the Pine Tar game. I remember watching it.
Wow. Okay, good one. Milk, what do you got?
Oh, I'm thinking about the Phillies. I just threw up in my mouth. I need them to win this week against the Orioles. It's just a horrifying position to be in.
Brutal. House from Philly. What do you got?
Milk, we're thinking about the same thing, buddy. Number 17, Shohei Ohtani is going to look great in a Phillies uniform next week at the trade deadline.
What?
You guys afford him.
Nah, that's not how.
We've got
Harper?
All the assets the Angels need.
You're sending Harper and Trey Turner.
No, we get to keep both of them.
Good luck.
It's a good debate, by the way.
I got a couple numbers. First of all, June 2021, the last time the Nats swept a three-game series.
Wow.
Until this weekend when they swept the possibly playoff-bound Giants. But the two bigger numbers are $6.05 billion and $60 million, two numbers very relevant to all Washington football fans, and we will certainly be talking more about those numbers a little later. We are missing Hope from Dallas today, so here we are. House, let's get it started. You got something near and dear to your heart that you want to talk about.
You know, like, we were joking a couple weeks ago about how Ricky Fowler wears orange on Sundays and then he always loses, and Rooster was like, maybe Ricky should stop wearing orange on Sundays. But you know, I don't know about you guys, but I am as superstitious as they come when it comes to watching sports. In anything in sports, I am extremely superstitious. So, you know, there's a lot of sports customs. The, you know, Tiger wearing his Sunday red and LeBron James throwing up chalk before every single, you know, game that he plays, every single one. There's a ton of these,
which you stole from Kevin Garnett, by the way.
I don't even remember. Is that right?
Yep.
So Nick Castellanos, when he scores, every time he scores, he crosses the plate and he runs a couple fingers across the dirt every single time. I know you guys have seen a million pitchers step across the first base chalk lines as they go back to the dugout. So I don't know. I'm just wondering if you guys are as superstitious as me on this and some of your favorite sports superstitions.
I think before we jump into it, House, I do think it's worth noting that you're not just superstitious. You think your behavior actually affects the fucking outcome of the game.
Yeah, and no, let's dive into this.
That's borderline crazy.
That's, you don't think it does? Insane.
For someone educated in the law and rational thinking, it comes very close to crossing a line of crazy town.
Let me ask you something, Bison. The next time, I don't know, do you have any good pitchers on the Nationals right now? Let's say Patrick Corbin takes the mound tomorrow night, and seven innings in, he's got a no hitter. Can I text you? Hey, you should turn on the game. Corbin's got a no hitter going. Can I do that?
No, you asshole. Why would you do such a thing?
Why? Are we controlling the outcome?
That's totally different.
What are you talking about?
Those are the baseball gods.
Oh, here we go.
That's totally different. Obviously, that's my superstition, is that you never talk about a no-hitter. Obviously.
Why? Because you're controlling the outcome. We control outcomes with our mind. It happens. If you're up.
Oh my God.
Listen, Milk, let me ask you this question. Milk and I are signing off
any minute now.
I know it's going to be a while till the Bucks win again, but when the Bucks were winning, if it's late in the game and things are going well, are you willing to get up from the seat on the couch that you're sitting at and move to a different place right in the middle of like a critical juncture of the game? Or do you think that seat is a lucky seat?
I will give you this. If I'm standing in a certain position, sitting in a certain seat, and success starts to happen, I cannot leave that
exactly
area. So I don't know why I don't like it. I feel like I'm clinically insane, but I can't move. I do feel like we will lose if I do.
Exactly.
And there's been times where I have.
I totally, totally disagree with all three of you.
You have no superstitions?
No, none. I really refuse to believe that supernatural things, which fans or athletes might believe in, have the power to control the outcome of a game or a person's performance or any of that. I just don't believe it. I think it's nonsense. Likewise, I don't believe that if there is a God, that God is paying attention to every single sporting event in America, and that, you know, when you hit a home run, you should be looking up to the heavens, and, you know, God doesn't care about your touchdown. Sorry.
The one thing I'll say about the, you don't talk about a no hitter is that, you know, generally speaking, that refers to guys in the dugout. And the reason for that is you don't want to break the pitcher's concentration. I think
but people yell at the announcers, the TV announcers, when they talk about it.
Well, you just might tell
me. How many times have you seen a guy say, throw up a stat about this hasn't happened?
He's made his last 10 free throws.
And then he misses.
Can't say that. I mean, come on, man.
Wait, did you guys play baseball at any? We know Bison did.
I did.
So you mean to tell me in your entire career of baseball from Little League to whenever you stopped, you didn't have a lucky glove, a lucky bat, any of those things?
I think there's a difference between superstition and ritual. And sometimes rituals help us calm the mind, right?
Oh, okay.
And
you're just, this is semantics.
No, it's not. Speak more, Dr.
Rooster.
All right, I'll give you a beautiful example of a ritual that helped clear a player's mind. Remember what Jason Giambi used to do when he got into a batting slump?
No.
He would wear a gold thong under his uniform.
What?
And it somehow made him just like, I can't possibly be taking myself too seriously right now wearing this thing under my uniform. And for him, it worked. The problem I have is with the people who are so damn superstitious that they do things the same way every single day on game day, and including their meals and everything else, is when they get in a slump, what are they supposed to do? Because they're so superstitious, they can't change their routines, or, you know, they're going to get struck by lightning or something.
Rooster, you don't think Wade Boggs should have eaten chicken before every single game that he ever played?
No, I do. I think if that helped him free his mind up, that's great. The problem is he inevitably had a slump. So what did he do? He didn't stop eating chicken. Right. He didn't stop taking batting practice at the same time every day. You know, Larry, what was that guy's name? Larry Walker, the Hall of Famer for the Rockies. Thought there was some magic to the number 3. So he wore number 33. He got up at 33 minutes past the hour every day. He got married at 3:33 p.m. on the 3rd of November.
I seem to know a lot about this.
Is he divorced?
I just think people are nuts. Really, come on. People.
You have no lucky shirt that you wear for any of your team's sporting events.
No.
Wow.
And when I played baseball, I would step on the line without any concern for whether I was going to get run over by a black cat and have a mirror fall on my head.
Wow.
It's just dumb. Now, sometimes rituals can be changed and all of a sudden you have a new mindset. Like I just read an article today that Anthony Rizzo is having a horrible year. So he changed his walk-up sign to some garbage Taylor Swift song.
Oh, that's the worst thing.
Broke out of his streak. Broke out of his batting slump.
No.
Taylor affects everything. So you think, you're telling me, Rooster, in Bull Durham, they did not need a live rooster to take the curse off of Jose's glove?
Yes, I'm really telling you that. All right, here's another one. I'm pretty sure only House would agree with this one. There was a manager for Birmingham City in the 90s named Barry Fry.
Okay.
Every day before a home match, he would go and pee in the corner of each corner of the stadium to get rid of evil spirits. I mean, that's insane.
What, are they successful?
How'd they do?
I don't know. Who knows? You remember Birmingham City being a powerhouse in the 90s? I don't.
Are you talking about soccer?
Let me tell you.
I don't remember anything about soccer.
Let me tell you how superstitious I am. So my favorite number is 24. And in the last several years at the Eagles games, they have now given, they have given the beer man, they have their own uniform numbers. So you can, you know, which beer man, you know, like beer man is wearing 68. So I will walk around the stadium till I find beer man 24 before I get a beer. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, God.
Let's face it. The all time house insanity was the snowman.
Oh, boy.
Are we allowed to talk about that?
Snowman.
Oof. Yeah.
By the way, that single
worked out pretty well.
No, I don't know. Carson Wentz is about to be out of the NFL.
Yeah, it worked out well for him.
And during the winter of their Super Bowl season, House sent us a photo of a snowman that his family made, and they put Carson Wentz's jersey on it. And shortly after that, he got injured. And House sends us all a note saying, "I blame myself." Jake's taking it too far.
Jake and I made a snowman. We put Carson Wentz on it. And the very next game, he had that injury against the Rams. He was out for the season. And lo and behold, what happens? The Eagles win a Super Bowl. Don't tell me that didn't affect the outcome. We weren't going to get there, apparently, with Carson.
You were despondent when he got hurt and blamed yourself for the injury.
His career. He was playing for the fucking Commanders at one point.
You made that happen with your mind.
Jesus. Oh, God. All right. Anybody else have a good superstition?
I'm not going to change. I can't affect the outcome. I'm just telling you that.
All right. Well, we should have, you know, listen, if you've got a good superstition out there, check out, come to our Facebook page and leave your superstition on there for us, because I know House isn't the only one who's this crazy. I know it. I know he's not. He's borderline, but...
I do have one last question on the superstition. I'm just curious, Milk, when the Tampa Bay Lightning make the playoffs, are you even capable of growing a playoff beard or no?
No, I've tried for a decade. Nothing.
You're looking at it right now.
Yeah, it's very patchy. Doesn't come in fully.
Oh, God.
No.
All right. Well, check us out. Drop us a line.
I keep imagining House walking around the link trying to find number 24 to get a beer.
Like frothing because he's so thirsty and he can't find anything to drink. Like,
where did he go?
Like, yeah. God.
Sounds miserable.
Yeah.
Oh, that is terrible. All right. Yeah, that's all we got. But I guess the next topic is mine. And ding dong, the witch is gone.
Congratulations.
I cannot believe, despite how many months this has been in the making, it is done. Dan Snyder, the deal is closed. He is not the owner of the Commanders, the Washington football franchise, anymore.
Thank God.
Started off $6.05 billion. That's what the Josh Harris group paid. It's a record for any sports franchise in North America. And it's Josh Harris, Mitchell Rales, who's a local philanthropist in the DC area, and Magic Johnson. That's the lead. There's a lot of different people. A couple interesting things about the sales that, you know, really because of how much the team went for, the NFL really had to be flexible in their financing rules. And I think more or less they had to have a conversation and say, you know, these franchises are going for so much money now that if we don't change some of our rules around financing the ownership of a team, we're going to limit ourselves to like three people who could ever buy a team. So there's a ton of minority investors in this. It's a huge purchase. That's one thing on it. But I mean, Milk for one is way too young, but we won three Super Bowls in 9 years at one point. I mean, this was a premier franchise in the NFL, and this guy just destroyed it. And somebody made, I heard this morning on a local podcast about how he did stuff that screwed up the team so badly. And this is bizarre, but if you think about it, this is what meddling does. Nobody in the team wanted to draft Dwayne Haskins with the 15th pick in that draft. I don't remember what year that was, 20 or 19 or something like that, but nobody wanted to. And Dan Snyder made them take Haskins. That's bad enough.
Wow.
But if you think about what happened the next year they had the second pick in the draft. The owner had said Haskins is the quarterback of the future. So with the second pick, they take Chase Young. Now, who did they let go by because they had their quarterback of the future? How about Herbert and Tua?
Oh, I don't know. That might be a little bit.
Chase Young.
Yeah, Chase Young at the time seemed really, really good pick.
That may be true. But part of that was we have the quarterback of the future on the team. You're not going to take anybody else. I mean, that's how this stuff plays out. I mean, good teams are planning down the road all the time. And so that's just the kind of stuff that he did. I mean, you know,
I think he destroyed your team before that. I remember early on, he kept signing these aging, expensive veterans who offered nothing to the team once they got there. You had Deion Sanders sitting on, in a lounge chair next to the owner during games because he couldn't play. You had that gigantic Albert Haynesworth, all those guys, terrible signings.
And it just goes, look, he was never going to get a stadium deal done anywhere, let alone in the district anywhere. And now, you know, Magic Johnson's going to charm, you know, the suits off the city council and we'll be looking at probably getting this. There's a real chance. And do you know what else is crazy? There's a serious discussion right now about the name change going back to Redskins. There's been so much data, polling, everything out there on this that now people like the Josh Harris has been calling them, you know, talking about the Redskins, the history of the Redskins, using the word in a way that over the last 5 or 6 years, nobody would even say the word. And it's a different conversation for a different day because there's a lot of mixed history on what that word actually means. And we don't need to get into that now. But, you know, Dan Snyder, if he ever said that word, it was the district will never let you come back here and build a stadium. Everything's changed. Everything is different in one day about this. And it's just I cannot even explain the mood in DC, because you just didn't think this was going to ever happen. And he's such a horrible guy. And it's just, it's over. But I do want to make one last note on this. The $60 million was the other number I threw out at the beginning. That's the fine that Dan Snyder has to pay. I think he is paying it out of the proceeds of the sale. But let's not forget something, and this is problematic. You know, this guy bought the team for $800 million. He is making a 700% gain in 24 years, and his punishment is a $60 million slap on the wrist, and he goes off. Now, you can say he lost his franchise, but he was found by in the Mary Jo White report to have harassed, assaulted, a female employee, to have run a hostile work environment. And this guy is laughing all the way to the bank on that report. He's already moved to the UK. He doesn't live here. And he's taken his $6 billion and is going to park it on his yacht.
Didn't you say 6.05. Because don't you think that he negotiated the fine into the asking price?
Sure he did. Sure he did.
I mean, he got zero slap on the wrist.
Yep.
Losing the team.
I don't know that he's fully out of the clear legally on all this stuff. Of course, it's never going to really touch him, given what he made. Look, I think it's good for the entire NFL that this guy is. He was hurting the NFL product. He was putting the owners in a bad situation. He was putting the league all around in a bad situation. He's a bad, bad dude. Bad dude. But I do have a question for all you guys. I know we've reached a point where there's like cross ownership of different sports franchises across different sports. Oftentimes it's the same owner that has, you know, teams in the same city, or maybe has an American team and then maybe a team over in like Premier League. But does it trouble any of you, of course, Bison, but any of you, that Josh Harris is an owner of the Washington football team, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the New Jersey Devils? I can tell you there's a lot of Sixers fans that are bothered by it, because there's something about loyalty to your town, to your city, to like interacting with the other teams. You know, our owners support each other, et cetera, et cetera. Josh Harris is not going to come and, you know, start bringing, you know, Philadelphia Eagles to come in and be at the center court anymore before Sixers games anymore. I know it's a small thing, but the question is, does that kind of thing bother any of you?
If I were a Sixers fan, the thing that would bother me more is his stated commitment to put the Commanders as his first priority.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd second that.
But that could be the case even if he bought the Eagles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one thing you have to recognize, and it's a little Pollyannish to not just get there on this. These are businesses that these guys are buying, right? These are business investments. Just like if somebody buys a car dealership and has a Chevy dealership on one block and a Ford dealership on another block and a Toyota dealership on a third block. I mean, these are business investments for these guys. Yeah, I get it. You want them to be all in because it does mean so much to the city. I mean, Josh Harris grew up in the DC area. He did grow up as a fan, but let me tell you something. Having a self-proclaimed number one fan didn't work out so well for us for the last 24 years, because Dan Snyder was a diehard at the time Redskins fan. So I don't know. I mean, I think your point is the better one about how does he prioritize and where does the money go? But these are self-contained businesses.
There's not a limited amount of capital. Are you
voice from God?
How? Hey, Brian. It's Brian Pope.
Oh, it's Brian Pope, guys? From Dallas, Texas.
Dallas, Texas. How are you?
Yes, I'm alive.
Your case?
That's confidential. He can tell you, but you have to kill you.
That's TBD. Yeah, no, I think it, as long as there's enough capital and it's not a limited resource issue, I think it's just it's what modern sports franchise ownership is about.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing. You have two owners in Harris and Magic Johnson who know how to entertain. Josh Harris, if you go to any Sixers game, he understands the fan experience and putting on a show. There is never a dull moment during timeouts, pregame, halftime, in between quarters. I do think, look, I hope the Redskins lose every single game from here to eternity, but I think the fans have been suffering long enough that I do think they're deserving of some entertainment and a reason to show up to whatever stadium they're going to play in. And I think you're going to get that from these owners.
And so that's going to be awesome. They'll have like the guy shooting the t-shirts and hot dogs from the middle of the field.
That's
now.
Right. Yes.
All sorts of
I don't think you meant that, what you said about losing every game from now until eternity.
That's true.
Remember, we play the Cowboys twice.
Yeah, I do want them to be the Cowgirls. So it's,
yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that was my story. Anybody else have anything else on that?
I would just say as a two things. One, I do think the multiple ownership thing is a real issue. We've dealt with that in Tampa with the Glazers and Man U. Now that's obviously they own a soccer team in the UK, but the distraction is a real thing and has brought, you know, some issues here in Tampa, even on the backdrop of a Super Bowl. But I will tell you this on a positive note. You cannot stress enough the importance of ownership. I know they're not the players, but I'm telling you, it starts at the top. We had a horrific owner, and probably Rooster, you're old enough to remember Hugh Culverhouse.
Yep.
He was the owner of the Bucks before the Glazers. He was before there was Dan Snyder's of
horrible ownership. He was as bad as Richardson and Snyder.
Absolutely horrendous. We had decades of losing. He sells. We run him out of town. The Glazers come in, and Malcolm Glazier. Now his sons have not done an effective a job, but Malcolm Glazier was a brilliant man, brilliant businessman, and turned Tampa around into a winning franchise. And if you have that, good things will come to the Commanders. So I mean, it's a magical move, man. I think the Commanders have a bright future.
I think the Red Sox fans would agree with Milk on the dangers of ownership being international and getting distracted from their core team, because the Red Sox have gone downhill ever since the owners bought. What are they on? Man U?
Yeah. No, not Man U.
No.
Liverpool.
Yeah, Liverpool.
Liverpool.
Yeah. Well, you just bring in Brady and that solves all your problems. Until Baker Mayfield, your
quarterback. Well, it's gonna still be a long. The Washington football team has a long way to go, but Lord knows I did not think I'd see the day. Snyder's a young man, and so this is remarkable.
Congrats, buddy!
Congratulations, Spice.
Yeah, congratulations to you, Pope. Yeah, congratulations to you, Pope. You may have the worst owner in the NFL now.
Right. At least you got rid of your owner before he's an octogenarian.
Yeah.
Fuck.
So
if the Redskins are worth $6 billion, what could the Cowboys sell for? Double that?
Not double that.
10 for sure.
What did Jerry buy them for?
No.
100 grand?
Yeah, like 800,
900,000. No way. Really?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, he did.
He did. It was
like 8 or 9 million.
Yeah, it was multi millions, but it wasn't anything close to a B.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was cheap. Yeah. All right. So Milk used an interesting word there. That's a good segue for us. You said it was magical, and I mean, we saw a little magic in Miami over the weekend. Didn't we house with?
I mean, God, Miami, Miami is making gold in the sports universe these days. I just think, just real briefly, if you did not see Messi's goal in the last seconds, literally, in basically a meaningless tournament between MLS teams and Mexico, then you're living under a rock. I think the entire sports world saw that really made for Hollywood moment. Messi's first game, he comes on in the, I don't know, 64th, 65th minute. The stadium is full. $440 is the average price per ticket for a basically exhibition match when being played by a last place team in MLS. And he comes on and gets a free kick awarded to him. And you saw him bend it in on that free kick with a perfect shot. And it's just what he's going to do for soccer in the United States. I mean, it was already trending up, but what he is going to do, LeBron James and Serena Williams were there in person at that game. I mean, this is greatness representing, you know, respecting greatness. And
don't forget Kim Kardashian. She was there
and
too.
Kim Kardashian.
Well, LeBron evidently told Kim that he was going to make it.
Of course. LeBron always seems to know before it happens.
He really went out on a limb.
That's his story. He said he told Kim Kardashian that he's going to make this.
He really hates to make stories about himself, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, wow. Gosh, LeBron.
That's like a mini punch. Just
just when you thought after we watched the World Cup and you were wondering whether or not Messi was going to finally get that last piece on the mantle, you know, for his beloved Argentina. And you thought with that magical game between him and Mbappe in the finals that the legend was complete and the movie was over. Hollywood cuts out after the World Cup ends. And it's not to say that this is the same stage as World Cup, but the legend just keeps growing. You know, it's just nuts. So it's really cool. I'm happy for MLS because it's been a league that's trying to really find their lane. A couple nights earlier, the MLS All-Stars played in Washington, D.C. against Arsenal, who, you know, was a top four team making Champions League. They almost won the Premier League last year, and Arsenal stomped the best that MLS has to offer. Well, next year, I think there's going to be some different players on the MLS All-Star team. It'll be interesting to watch what happens just in a given year between this past week and next year.
There's an amazing picture from the Messi checking in, and it might have actually been from the kick, where everybody is standing with their phones out filming except Beckham. And Beckham is just sitting there in a suit, just leaning in, watching. And he's the only one who doesn't have a camera, you know, that he's just taking in the actual moment of it. And he has this little grin on his face, like just totally at peace watching what's happening. It's a pretty cool picture. We'll put it up on Facebook.
And so, you know, here's another kind of addition to what you're saying, House, about soccer finally catching on. Did you guys see where there was an exhibition match in Chapel Hill between Chelsea and Wrexham? We all know Wrexham from the Ryan Reynolds story. Anyway, it was sold out. Keenan Stadium was sold out. Over 50,000 fans came to see a friendly between Chelsea and a fourth tier English soccer club. So, yeah. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
They set a record for U.S. watch game in MetLife Stadium between Arsenal and Man U this past weekend for an exhibition game. And that's why Messi's bet on the MLS financially is going to be the right one. Had Messi done that same thing this past weekend, but over in Saudi Arabia, playing for some Saudi Arabian club, coming on the 93rd minute to make some free kick, I'm just telling you, it wouldn't have cashed the same way. No way.
He would have lived to kick another day.
Yeah.
You're right.
Well, you saw where Mbappe turned him down, right? How much did they offer Mbappe?
$1.1 billion.
For 1 year?
Crazy.
$300 million for the transfer fee and $700 million for his salary for the year.
Unreal.
And he said no.
That's more than some sports franchises are worth.
That's $700 million for like 6 months.
Yeah, he's gonna end up dismembered because the Saudis don't like not getting what they have or so.
By the way,
Bison that said that. That was Bison.
Yeah,
that
right.
Said
that. No, it was not. That was Pope.
Are any of you guys gonna go to a Miami game? I just looked at tickets when they play Orlando in September.
Good luck getting a ticket.
Hey, can we move on here? I can't wait to get to golf and tennis.
Yeah, it's sarcastic, Ruzer.
We're moving from soccer to golf and tennis.
We do it all.
We do it all. Pope, you're late. You get the merits for being late tonight, but you do still get to talk about the Open.
Well, I mean, nobody had Brian Harman winning, I assume, on any of their
house stuff.
House picked him on his fantasy golf team among other golfers. Yes, I obviously, but cool. Nobody's picking Brian Harman to win.
I did hear House Rick Riley predict that he would be the top left-handed finisher.
Oh, wow. Talk about going out on a limb. That's awesome.
Geez.
Put a hero.
So over he, in other words, he beat Phil head to head.
Right. Yeah.
And like Bubba Watson, did he even play?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. So Brian Harman, who is a, I guess, you know, for lack of a better word, he's a plotter. I mean, the guy gets out, plays tournaments every week, finishes, you know, top 25, top 30 on a regular basis. Sometimes he competes, sometimes in the first, second round, you know, he's up there on the leaderboard and you're like, well, you know, who's this guy? Can he sustain it? But what was he going into the Open? He was what, 26 in the world?
So 175 to one
in the 20s. Yeah.
So, you know, somebody that he's on the like third tier guy to watch. Wrongly, and I'm sorry, Brian, don't come after me, but I didn't think that you had the stamina to go 72. And I said that you would fade. But
he's going to dismember you.
Well, he's got a bow. He's going to come after
you. He's going to put a bow through your heart.
Exactly.
Left-handed.
Exactly. But, you know, it's
not a bow, an arrow. That shows you how much we know about hunting on this show.
That's Roy McIlroy. We're going to cover hunting next week.
Yeah. Roy McIlroy has now gone a full decade without winning a major.
Oh, that's a show.
I know, Patrick, that bumped you out. But, you know, so much talent, and he just can't put it together. Nobody could putt this weekend except for Harman.
Except for Brian Harman.
Yeah. I mean,
no three putts.
He set the record for the lowest number of putts in the tournament. Yeah.
Well, I mean, come on. He made a 40-footer that basically just shut the door on 14. But a couple times there were moments where he staggered in the first five holes on Saturday and Sunday, and you're like, okay, here we go. And he, to his credit, he came back. He had a game plan, and that was to hit the ball short of the pot bunkers, which, you know, he is a shorter hitter than some of those guys. Some of those guys were trying to take it out over the pot bunkers, and they were, you know, going into the gorse or the bushes or even in the bunkers. But Harman was just consistent. You know, he's one of those guys who is just not going to make a lot of mistakes if he can just keep the ball in the fairway. And
he hit 70% of his fairways.
Yeah.
So that and being an exceptional putter will get you somewhere.
It will. And his short game, I mean, he got up and down on some of those on Saturday and Sunday. You were thinking, okay, here we go. You know, he's going to not be able to get up and down. And then Rahm or somebody, McIlroy, Fleetwood, all those guys had their chances. They just could not putt. I mean, Cam Young, if he could have putted, he would have been a threat. But, you know, Brian Harman one of those guys? Is he a one-off? I think that's one of the questions we ask. Is he a one-off? Is he going to win, you know, one major and then he won't compete for any others? Was this a magical weekend for him?
Didn't he almost win an Open not too long ago? He came in second place.
Kepka. Well, it was a few years ago.
Kepka.
Yeah, Kepka beat him.
I think he'll be back in this tournament.
Yeah, but I mean, is Troon going to be – everybody said this was a favorable setup for him. Is Troon going to be as receptive to Brian Harman's game? I mean, somebody made a comment that this course was set up perfectly for his game. I don't know, but I mean
– the prognosticators were also saying that this course was perfect for DJ.
Yeah,
did he even make the cut?
No.
He's not interested in playing golf anymore.
I agree with you, Pope, because it is. I mean, McIlroy, all these guys, they take advantage of their length. And I mean, if he didn't have to hit it far, he didn't have to hit it long to win this tournament. And that's not true in a lot of courses in the US, especially.
Right.
And if you have good short iron play and can putt, you know, he took away that advantage and especially yesterday with the conditions, you know, McIlroy was out 200 something yards on second shots, which is unheard of, by the way, a lot of times. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see Harman winning a U.S. Open or anything like that. But I agree with you, Toby. I think he could win another Open.
Harman is your style of player based on how long he takes before.
How many waggles he has?
The waggler.
I appreciated the head nods back and forth.
Oh my God.
No, I mean, I was just, it was really
connected. And apparently he's bought some contraptions to help him practice. I didn't see him using it after every shot, like someone we know, but he's with you.
Whatever it takes, man. Easy, partner.
Well, it was kind of boring open.
Well, he had a huge lead.
I mean, it was kind of boring.
There was no real drama on Sunday. Yeah. There really wasn't.
And there wasn't really any major carnage, which is what the Open is famous for.
Yeah.
True. I still want to know why Ricky Fowler is wearing sunglasses in the pouring rain.
So it's Phil. I think,
didn't we answer that question at the beginning of the hour?
We talked about Ritual. Orange, but does he have Ritual. To wear the sunglasses too?
Yes.
Did they have like little windshield wipers on them so that they can?
Yeah.
Guys were turning their hats around. It was raining so hard the water was pouring down there.
He was one of the bigger disappointments of the tournament.
People thought he was playing well.
He finished even, so that was what, top? I don't know, 25?
No, it's good.
You're not first, you're last.
Loser.
That's right.
Loser. All right. Can we go on to the thrilling topic of Wimbledon?
Is this still happening?
Are we covering?
We got to catch up the listeners.
Go on, Milk. Talk about that guy who still lives with his parents behind
you. Milk, you're the expert.
Yeah, Milk, you're the expert.
Well, so our listeners know Pope and I had a bet. Well, this is the way I remember it, at least. We had a bet who was going to win Wimbledon. I picked Alcaraz and he picked Joker. Is that how you guys remember it? And I was right.
And at some point, Pope said that if Alcaraz pulls this off, that you become the new tennis expert.
Exactly. And my expertise came through. I saw what he didn't see. And there it was, his second major victory.
This is like your coronation. Yeah,
thank you.
Right. Take a lap, Milk.
Yeah, step up to the plate,
lap,
bro.
Come on, Milk.
I will just say,
better yet, step on Pope's head.
Well, look, he's like Joker. He's fading. His knowledge.
Wow.
He couldn't let
that
go.
That is a
Joker.
Shot across
he's held
the bow.
Onto him. He's held on to him so long he couldn't let go, and it got in a way of better judgment, which I saw. And I will tell you this. I remember watching the U.S. Open like probably 20 years ago or whatever, and it was Agassi versus Federer. And Federer destroyed Agassi, and I said, you know, that his career's done. It's over. That's the end. He's too old. I think we finally saw that at Wimbledon. I think that's the beginning of the end for Joker. I think let me tell you why. Hold on.
Milk has been doing this for 20 years. Don't doubt him. So yeah.
I know what I'm talking about. He is 36 years old, and I don't care what you say. Father Time is undefeated, and he has gotten away with being so successful because he is so fucking good, by the way, that his talent has been able to get away from these younger guys and, you know, he's able to just use his talent against some of these guys that have more, you know, just energy or whatever you want to call it. And I saw a guy, this guy is just as good as Joker, and he's 20 years old. And I think, you know, he owned him in the first set, Joker did. And then this guy comes back and wins the whole thing. You never see that. He's got a 2-1 record against the greatest tennis player in the world. I think finally, Joker was facing a guy who's just as good as him, and the age comes out. I mean, it's 36 is ancient in tennis. You don't see a lot. Andy Murray is 36. We look at him and we're like, holy fucking shit. Andy Murray, who is that? So
are we still talking about tennis?
Yes. Joker's done. Pope, do you agree?
I think Pope walked out. He couldn't take it anymore.
You've hurt his feelings. He quit the show.
He left his shoes on the mat. He's done.
Oh, wait.
He's back.
What is the rebuttal? I don't see this guy competing anymore.
rebuttal is that Joker is going to win another three or four majors. How about
Whoa.
100%.
All right. There's only one way to make tennis interesting.
Only one way.
What do you guys got on it?
What's the wager?
What's the wager?
Bet you $100 he does not win.
No, that's not interesting. I want head shaved.
I'll bet you $6 billion.
All right, whoever. Yeah. How about whoever loses gets the tattoo?
Gets the tattoo.
No.
I take it all back.
Oh, God.
For the listeners, three of the five of us have the SMQB's logo tattoo. Two are still holding out. And it's the two tennis buffs.
That's right.
Yes. Naturally.
I will tell you this.
That's right.
Alcaraz will win at least 14 majors.
I agree with that.
Well, how in the world are we supposed to bet on that? Two of us will be dead by then.
Yeah, we're going to come back when we're in my 70s. Rooster and I'll be.
Well, it's not my fault. You're so old.
Jesus. Rooster and I'll be in hospice.
At least we'll know that the Cowboys still won't have won a Super Bowl. So that's true.
They will not have. They'll be going on 50 years by then.
Okay.
I mean, he could win a lot of majors. He's got the talent, no question. And you know, one of the reasons he could win is because other than Joker, there's not really a big three or big four that I can tell around the corner. So he could dominate in a way that Federer, Nadal, and Joker weren't able to because they kept knocking each other off.
I agree with that.
That's a very good point.
What is this person's name? Huh? What is his name?
Carlos the Jackal.
Alcatraz.
Carlos.
Alcaraz.
Alcaraz.
The guy's 20 years old. He makes every single shot on the court.
And he lives with his parents.
And now apparently on every possible surface. So
and he gets three home cooked meals a day.
Yeah.
So we know his nutrition is going to be fine because he still lives with his mom.
I would love to see another Joker Carlos final in the U.S. Open coming up in a month.
What is it, Drew?
Yeah.
Because I'd love to see another bet between you and Mill.
Sounds fucking riveting. Okay. Who's got a punch?
It's this week's punchable face.
Somebody, please get us out of here.
I've got one. Oh, you have one too, House?
Yeah, you go first, Rooster.
All right. I can't believe I'm doing this.
Oh, boy.
He's punching the Giants.
I'm punching the Giants ownership. Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Spare no one.
This is my favorite episode.
Holy shit.
I firmly believe that the Giants ownership are guilty of colluding with other owners on this running back issue. Saquon Barkley is not Zeke. He is not a broken down first through third down back who made his career behind a superior offensive line, and all he could do was run the ball 3 to 5 yards a pop. Saquon Barkley is the Giants' offense, period. Without Saquon Barkley, Danny Jones is a guy who throws 16 touchdowns and 17 interceptions. With Saquon Barkley, he signs this gigantic contract, and the Giants are screwing with their best player. So I think the ownership is only doing this because of collusion. It's no coincidence that Josh Jacobs has not been signed and Ekeler went through all of his nonsense. They've clearly decided they're going to freeze out the highly paid running backs. And where Daniel Jones is supposed to be the leader of the team. He basically is in the lucky sperm club because he's got Saquon on his team and it's what made him all this money. Why doesn't he do what Milk's God, Tom Brady, used to do when he was on the Patriots and go to the owners and say, we need him. I'm not leaving until you sign him. And if you need to take some of my money to sign him, go ahead. I'll restructure. He never even said a peep in defense of his moneymaker. And I just think that the rest of the locker room is going to have less respect for Daniel Jones. The owners blew it. And I disagree with everybody who says, Saquon is a replaceable part, just like all running backs.
if you look at the statistics, he is the Giants' offense. And yeah, we got some new receivers in, but they're all untested, and who knows what's going to happen with those guys.
But why is Barkley getting punched?
Because
social media.
He responded to all this by scrubbing his social media like a bitch.
Say it.
Just like the others who do it. I hate that shit. Don't fucking Kyler hold Murray. Your breath and act like a baby like Kyler Murray. You're better than that. Saquon Barkley is a class act. If he gets his shit together with his contracts and he finishes out his career, he's going to have a promising career in television. He's just that personable and classy. He doesn't need to be behaving like some asshole on the Memphis Grizzlies or Kyler Murray. He shouldn't do that. So he gets a little milk slap. I'm giving a punch and to the ownership and to Daniel Jones.
So Rooster, you're the GM for the Giants. What are you signing him to then?
Well, what's the difference between the what they were offering and what he was asking for? A few million.
Obviously a lot.
No, not a lot. It was not a lot. It was just that he wanted
or how many guaranteed. Years
does he want?
Or how many years?
I think he wanted something like 13 and they were offering 11 or 10 or 11. But he wanted
years.
He wanted 4, I think, and
4 years. Maybe he's got 2 left. Maybe.
I believe this is running back.
The NFL now.
So but the unintended consequences of what they're doing is they've taken the hottest coach in football and cut him off at the knees. There's going to be tension with the coach and the GM and the ownership. It's just a stupid move. The Giants can afford to make a bad decision for 2 out of 4 years on Saquon Barkley. If with Saquon Barkley, they may go deep into the playoffs this year or next year. Without him, they have no chance.
I have no idea how much time is left on the collective bargaining agreement between the NFL players and the owners, but I can tell you this, the remnants from this current running back thing are going to linger for a long time, because what's really at the heart of all this is guaranteed contracts. And while it's become a passing league, and while it's true that whether it's 2 years or 4 years left, the bottom line is teams don't win Super Bowls on the backs of running backs anymore. But these running backs who are at the top of the league, you know, they all got together with Nick Chubb and Austin Eckler and Christian McCaffrey and Saquon. And they basically are trying to unionize amongst the running backs to figure out a way that they can keep the owners. Now, they have no bargaining power right now, but no bargaining power. But one day the players are going to have some bargaining power, and it's going to come down to guaranteed contracts, because it's one of the few leagues where it doesn't happen. And it's a problem for running backs. It's really hurting them.
The problem is too, you can't treat Christian McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley the same as you would treat Zeke Elliott, because they block in the passing game and they catch passes and have lots of passing yards. They're different. They're a different breed. They're four down backs.
Rooster, it is bananas when you see the stats that I think the average running back gets paid less than the average kicker in the NFL right now.
What? Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, on a per annualized or per game basis. Yeah, there's some crazy stat like that.
Yeah, average annual value, right?
Yeah.
Well, are you talking about second and third string running backs bringing down the surely right. The first string running backs aren't
there's,
getting
there's less. One kicker on the team.
Yeah. But the point is well made. I mean, in today's NFL, look, the Zeke contract broke the running back contracts. That was an albatross around our, it's not the only one. There are others, but that was an albatross around the Cowboys' neck for years. They regretted it pretty much as soon as he signed it. So you're just not going to see those kind of numbers again for a second contract for these running backs. And they're having a hard time. They're struggling with that, but that's reality.
But to House's point, Nick Chubb does have guaranteed money in his contract, and yet he's still in solidarity with these guys. And same with Christian McCaffrey. So what I think another unintended consequence is going to be is when they all start signing, you know, reluctantly their what do you call those deals where they get
incentive deals?
No, the thing that Kirk franchise? Cousins did. Yeah, when they get the franchise tag, all right, so they sign it and he gets $10 million next year. Every running back in the league is hurt by the time of the second game, right? They're all going to start saying, all right, I'm a little banged up. I'm going to have to miss this game. You know, they're all going to start talking. They're all going to start figuring out a way to make the league take notice, and it's going to hurt the game.
Great.
Good punch. All right, House, you got one?
Yeah. I mean, Brooks Koepka is such a jerk.
You just send it right cupcake. There.
Cupcake. He is such an ass. There's a story that came out just before this open that Koepka gave an interview to Sports Illustrated where he basically said that he has given up. I've basically given up on Matthew Wolf. A lot of talent, but I mean the talent's wasted. So first of all, it's a jerky thing to say about any teammate or any like colleague in your sports, but particularly when you know the guy is battling mental health issues, which is apparently well documented amongst the pros, that's Wolf has some demons that he's dealing with. And what could be shittier than to go into the public press and say, I've given up on this guy. And
for purposes of background, Koepka is the captain of the live team that Wolf is on.
Yeah. Team Smash. So basically he agreed to be on Team Smash. Wolf did. And Koepka was like, who cares? Like, really, that's what his goal is to win the team competition in Liv. I mean, as it is, you're being paid ridiculous amounts of money from, you know, the public interest fund of Saudi Arabia. I just think the guy is so full of himself, such a jerk. He has plenty of money. He's got plenty of majors. And when a guy is struggling like that, you know, OK, you want to be disappointed that the guy didn't turn out to be what you want him to be, fine. But to go and then air it out in an interview, like, what is your constitution when you say something like that? And Wolf says he's really heartbroken over it. Like, this is not helping his mental health issues that this is being aired out in the public. And so, believe me, I shed no tears that Brooks Koepka was +8, finishing 64th in the open, the jerk off.
Punch him in the knee.
I'm going to punch him in the knee. I'm going to swing a club across his face.
So we have one live golfer getting his feelings hurt by another live golfer. Fuck them all. Yeah. Fuck them all.
Wow. House, wow. Where did Koepka go to college?
I don't know. I'm guessing Florida or something.
No. Well, Florida State. So that just.
Oh, well, then that's another reason to punch him.
Right. It's just this is. Par this
happens.
Course.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of guys dying to play with Koepka in the Ryder Cup. That'll be interesting.
Yeah. Fuck them all. All right. Anybody have a lasso?
We're so positive this week.
Crickets. All right, we'll save that.
Lasso the Commanders. Lasso them. You know.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Here's to never having to utter Dan Snyder's name again on this show.
Let's hope.
Yes.
Let's hope. All right, buzzer beaters.
Well, I'll go quick this week. There could be some tectonic plates in baseball. August 1st is the trade deadline. So maybe I guess we'll have one more discussion of it next Monday. But some of the biggest names, have the Angels finally given up on Mike Trout? Are they willing to move Ohtani for a haul? You know, there are five or six teams that are on the cusp of making the playoffs in the National League, and they're all desperate for anything from starting pitching, relief pitching, outfielders. There are a lot of needs, a lot of teams. I love it about baseball this year. There's a lot of buyers at the trade deadline, and I think you're going to hear some major, major players move this week. I'd be surprised if it doesn't happen.
Don't go to the Phillies. Please do not let that happen.
I looked into the whole Ohtani deal, and I don't think anybody's going to trade for him because the cost is too high for a rent a player. Because according to everything I've read, his people say he is not going to entertain any discussion about signing a long-term contract with any team that he may be traded to, period. Not even a starter. So if you don't have any assurance that you can potentially sign this guy to a long-term haul, then why are you going to give up your franchise for the guy for a rent a player for 2 months?
I think some of these owners are smart enough to pull it off. You know, sure. Okay. Yeah, we know it's a year, but we're going to make you our starter. We're going to put everything around you. We're going to pay you $300 million a year. You know, you're going to be the highest player ever. You know, I go ahead, test the market, but we're telling you the reason why we're signing you is because we're going to pay you this money.
I think he's going to either the Yankees or the Dodgers. And I don't think anybody can do anything about that.
As a trade or at the end of his contract?
Free agent signing.
That's annoying.
It is annoying, but that's, you know, that's where Babe Ruth wants to go. He didn't want to go to Texas. He didn't want to go to Seattle.
The more reason for the Angels to trade him, even if it's not for the haul that you think, but get something, right?
Get something for him.
Right. Well, like the Orioles. The Orioles have the best record in the American League and apparently have a whole slew of young players ready to bring up next year. So they're buyers right now.
I think they need a pitcher.
Does he not have
a no trade clause in his contract for at all?
I don't think he does.
Remember, it doesn't work that way in baseball. It's based on service time, right? If you're like 10-5, 10 years in the majors and 5 years with the same team, then you can veto a trade. He's not been in the majors for 10 years. So I don't think somebody should check me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's how it works in Major League Baseball. You have to be a 10-5 guy and then you can exercise no trade.
I'm saying he's not going to get traded.
Are they still in it? Sort of?
No.
The Orioles are a sleeper team to get him, though, in a trade.
I think so.
I don't know. I don't know why you leverage your future.
Who else has a buzzer beater?
I've got a couple quick ones. Number one, Jimmy G has been released to play, and so the Raiders are not going to void his contract, and they're going to give him at least a year. Number two, did you guys hear what Jordan Addison's excuse was for going 140 miles an hour in a 55?
I think it was in the citation about his dog.
Having a dog emergency at home that he had to get home to. So the dog must have called him up and said, "I'm in crisis, brah. Hurry up."
who advised him on that?
Oh, man. I think it's in the citation. I think it's in the police citation. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if Mrs. Pope called and said we had some issues with one of our dogs.
You'd have to fly home from Copenhagen, right?
I don't think my Infiniti will go 140, but it would go as fast as it could up that tollway.
What time was it though? Didn't he get arrested at 3 a.m. or something?
No, I think it was at a normal. Oh, it was just after 3 a.m. in St. Paul.
Okay, yeah.
The dog was throwing up.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Stomach issues.
He was driving a Lamborghini. Guy hasn't played one down in the NFL yet. He was driving a Lamborghini, 140. Hey,
that type of 140
at 3 a.m.
Yeah, that's nothing.
And it's an emergency. I don't think so.
That's what we might call a red flag.
Yeah.
There's more to the story. I'm going to dig into it.
My dog ate the fill in the blank. That was the emergency.
Oh, get on this.
I will. Any other buzzer beaters? Come on. We got to salute Red Bull and Max Verstappen.
Oh, fuck. We do?
Yeah, we got to do it.
Record.
12 wins in a row. It's never happened in Formula One before.
The death of Formula One.
It is a dominant race car driver and team. And it's never happened before. They deserve a buzzer beater.
Tune in next week when we cover the evil people in sports.